You may kill me, but you may never insult me. Who am I? I'm Captain Jack Sparrow.
Get the truth about movies on the movie show.
If he were telling the truth, he wouldn't have told us.
Tell them, Sparrow!
Unless, of course, he knew you wouldn't believe the truth, even if he told it.
Hello?
Joey, it's Ross. I need some help.
Help has come your way because you are listening to the movie show.
What is up?
Hello, listener.
This is the movie show
on
Active FM. Sorry, Ryan, I so interrupted you.
It's
there.
Like on the Active FM equals.
I humbly apologize. As I spoke, I was like, damn it, he was speaking still.
Active FM equals ORSPS. Well, actually, favorite ORSPS. Mm-hmm, yes. Mm-hmm,
definitely.
Just so you know.
Yes.
It's the same thing. Mm-hmm. Active FM, ORSPS. Done. Finished.
And today, we are going to be doing a film review on a 2004 movie.
Can you believe it?
2004.
Imagine that.
Sure. Long, long, long time ago. Ryan, how old were you in 2004?
I was 5.
No, you weren't. Because I'm younger than you and I was 7.
So that means you were younger.
What?
2004, right?
2004. Mm.
19.
For real?
I was 19 years old.
Sure.
Everyone's going, ah, are you that old?
Are you sure, Ryan?
Ryan,
19.
Ryan, you don't sound that old. Thank you very much. Thanks. I'll take that as a compliment.
There we go. He does not sound his age.
I must say, this movie was okay. There's two things to talk about here. The first one is the storyline, which was a rom-com. But the part that got me out of... There were two things that got me in this film, all right? And it's the reason why I enjoyed them. Number one is the characters. Because we got Marvel, like, spilt all over this movie.
I'm like,
wait. So Mary Jane left Spider-Man
and went to... And there was also Peter in the film,
yes,
though.
And went to Vision. And look.
Happy is there.
Professor X.
Yes.
His brother is Vision. I'm like...
That makes a lot of sense.
Exactly. No, I know why he's got the mind thing. I'm like, wow. That's amazing.
True.
And then there are special effects in this film. Like there's some photography shots in there. I was just like, wow, that's very cool. Unnecessary, but in a good way. You know, they didn't have to.
But
it was very, very cool.
I enjoyed that. I thought it was very cool.
I mean, there's tennis. Who would ever think a tennis movie would be so interesting?
Right?
You look at some of the shots, the camera's like bouncing off the floor.
It's like the camera is the ball, the tennis ball. It was so cool.
Yeah.
No, this movie is definitely a movie to watch if you haven't watched it. The main actor is Paul Bettany, and I must be honest, that is actually the reason I ended up watching the film, was because I searched Paul Bettany's movies, and then I was like, oh, there's one called Wimbledon. Well, let's watch it. It was very, very good. The only thing is the morals in the film aren't great, but they don't show you anything, which I thoroughly enjoyed.
Yeah.
I think that might have been because it was in 2004. I don't know. Maybe it was back then. They decided to be more modest. But the morals aren't too great, but it's not you have to keep switching it on and off or keep skipping scenes. Like that's, you don't have to do that. So from that perspective, it's... Yeah.
There were some parts I skipped. I didn't know what was happening. I was just like, okay, skip. Next.
Just in case.
Yeah, 10 seconds. I'm like, okay. All right.
All right, we passed. Woo!
Just in case, yeah.
So the budget for the film is $31 million. The box office was $41.5 million. So they did make profit, obviously, though it wasn't like a box office success or whatever. But then again, it was 2004. So, yeah, we can't really compare it with the current. And it's a rom-com.
Where was YouTube in 2004?
I'm sure they were around.
Because there's like no interviews. I didn't find anything on this film.
I found one interview with Paul Bettany, but it wasn't specifically about this film. It was an interview. You know when actors go through their most iconic characters?
Yes.
It was one of those. And in this, he actually classifies this as one of his iconic characters.
Really?
Which was really cool, yeah. Other ones, he mentioned A Beautiful Mind. He obviously was in A Beautiful Mind. He obviously mentioned Jarvis and Vision from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He mentioned he was in Solo, A Star Wars Story.
Yes, that's right.
And he mentioned A Knight's Tale, which was with Heath Ledger. And then he mentioned one before that as well. I can't remember what it was, though. But he did mention this one. yes, as one of his most iconic characters. And I think the reason he thought it was iconic was he actually said doing a rom-com or acting in a rom-com is actually very difficult because your character almost has to have this charm. And what he said was like someone like Hugh Grant does it so easily. But for him, he actually found this role quite challenging. Like he said, it was quite a challenging role to pull off.
I think I can relate, eh? If I had to do a rom-com, if I had to act in a rom-com, how do you... That would just be weird. Yeah, I think it would be very weird.
But the cast was also very good. So obviously we have Paul Bettany, who played Peter Colt. He was the main character. And as Ryan stated, he was Vision in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Then we have Kirsten Dunst, who was Lizzie. She was also a tennis player in the film. And she was, if you watch the OG Spider-Man, the one
Mary
with...
Jane Watson.
Yes.
Yay!
She was Mary Jane. Then we have Jon Favreau, who was Happy in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. He also directed The Lion King.
When I saw him, I'm like, look at this guy. Look at this guy. What is he doing here?
And he was such a... his character
otherwise,
was... He was Paul Bettany's... What do they call them? Agent.
So he was the agent.
He was the agent. But at the same time, he was like the agent for both players. So in the final of Wimbledon, he's sitting there with an American and a UK flag.
Yeah.
And whoever scores the point, he just puts up. I'm like, seriously? Seriously, people? That you can see it's just someone trying to make money. Like, that is literally the aim. And then we have James McAvoy, who plays Charles Xavier in X-Men.
I did not recognize him at
He was
first.
Very young in this film.
Very, I didn't recognize him first. I was just like, yeah. And then I think he took, because he's a cyclist, so he's got cycling hats on or whatever. And then maybe it's because he had the hair, number one. But number two, then he took it off and I'm like, wait, what? I'm like,
I recognized his voice.
It's Professor Xavier. I'm like, wow.
Yeah. And then, Ryan, do you know there were two famous tennis players in the film? As in actual famous tennis players.
Is this like where they did their cameo moments or something like
that? It was more than a cameo. They were the two commentators.
So they were all tennis players?
Yep. Two. So Chris Everett and John McEnroe, both are famous tennis players.
I know exactly who they are.
She actually, so the female, she was the American former world number one tennis player. She won 18 Grand Slam single championships and 3 double titles. And she was the year-ending world number one singles player in 1974, 75, 76, 77, 78, 80, and 81. So that is her. And then we have John McEnroe, who is a former professional American tennis player. He was known for his shot-making and volleying skills, in addition to confrontational on-court behavior that frequently landed him in trouble with umpires and tennis authorities. So those two, they were actually the two commentators, especially, they were commentating the whole time, though, like throughout the tennis matches, but specifically the final. You see them, but those two commentators are actual tennis players that have done very well in the tennis industry. Yes.
Interesting.
So getting the actors to play professional looking tennis actually proved much more difficult than anticipated. Eventually it was decided to film them performing the strokes and digitally add the ball afterwards.
How crazy is that?
Right.
I thought that when they served pretty powerfully, eh?
Do you know that the serves were the actual actors?
Yeah.
So they did their own serves.
That's what I found quite... I was just like, even the close-ups, I was just like, man, it looks like he really hits that ball.
But they did.
So, all right.
So the serves were real. The rest of the game
the
was...
Plane, the actual plane.
Yeah,
so
the fake.
Let's think about this. So in other words, this is what they did. All right. This is what I've gathered. They would serve. Mm-hmm. And then they would play tennis.
Yes.
They would pretend to be playing. So if it looked like the one player was hitting the ball that way,
then you'd run.
Then you'd run towards that side.
Yes.
And they would hit it. And all the CG artists needed to do was obviously replicate the tennis. Now, here's the question. Did he simulate the ball?
But that's the thing.
And let the ball really bounce? Because, I mean, okay, a bouncing ball, I mean, come on, animation 101, it's not too difficult. You could, okay, here's the tennis racket, just make sure, and you're cutting shots.
Yeah.
So, which means that in terms of the timing with the ball, you could get it right. Okay, they weren't always cutting shots. The shots were so brilliant.
They were so good.
I thought they were so good. There was one shot I was like, wait, how did they do that? The time lapse. There was the one time lapse of the game.
Yes.
And the way that they stitched. So the camera was moving. Look, this is 2004. Forgive me for being such a bad film, whatever, fan or whatever. But I don't know if robotics was around that time. Because the only way they could have done a shot like that is by having either a camera on a track and then just getting them to do a couple of shots and then roll. It was good. It was really good.
I also was like, how did they get this right in 2004?
Look, the way I would have guessed it, camera on a track, they run the track slowly, they get them to mess around with the ball a lot, play a couple shots.
And then just speed
run. They'd probably have to do it a couple times. So, okay, actors, play a game, roll the shot from front to back. Okay, can we do it again? Camera reset, maybe do it a couple times. And then they would just stitch it. Obviously, then I can think of how. In fact, you know what? I'm gonna test this. I know exactly how they did this, but it was very, very good.
It was very cool.
The shooting. But anyway, like I was saying, so they're just hitting the ball around. They're pretending to play tennis. I'm sure they had a lot of fun.
I would love to play. I would. So anyone wants to fake play tennis with me, I'm willing to do it. I will give it my all. It will look like I'm Ryan. You can then take the footage and then just add the ball in afterwards. I will so do that.
It must have been a lot of fun. And I'm sure a couple of times, like, dude, why are you there? I hit the ball there. You lost. Right. It's over.
But start running in the other direction.
So that's what they did. Peter.
Peter Colt.
Peter often when he serves.
No, it was very good. The grunting was on point.
So it was really, really cool.
So also scenes for the film were filmed. This is so cool, Ryan. Do you know that some of the scenes for the film were filmed during the Wimbledon tournament in 2003, right? The actual tournament. The actors would walk out on court at the beginning or end of a match as though they were really competing, as in at the actual Wimbledon tournament. They'd get the actors to walk out. The officials and spectators were actual tennis officials and spectators rather than extras. And it is the only time in the history of the tournament that this has been allowed. So there was actual footage from the actual Wimbledon tournament in 2003, and they allowed the actors, so they would have been like, okay, now we just have some filming going on, we're gonna see Paul Bettany walking out pretending he, and then you see Paul Bettany walk. That is so cool. That is even for the actors, that
and
must
I'm
have
sure
been
they
such
watched it.
Ah, imagine going to Wimbledon and pretending you, that would have been awesome for them as well.
Well, Paul Bettany would have felt like home, I guess. He would have been like, been here a couple of times. You know.
Probably, yeah. The movie cast professional but little known tennis players to play against the stars. So the tennis players that actually play against the main characters are real tennis players. They're actual tennis players, but they're not like the big, so they're not in, like, you know, they're not high-ranking tennis players, but they actually are tennis players. And in the director's commentary, Richard, who's the director, shared that he met an up-and-coming female tennis player but rejected her as she looked too similar to Kirsten Dunst. She was Maria Sharapova before she went on to win several Grand Slam titles, including Wimbledon. So he refused to have her in it because she looked too similar to Kirsten Dunst, but then she went on to be like one of the best women in the world in tennis. So she's probably like, you didn't want me in your movie. And then Kirsten Dunst underwent serious physical training to prepare for this role. Also, Paul Bettany actually was trained by an actual tennis player for the role. So he actually got together with an actual tennis player who helped him learn how to play tennis. Because before this movie, he did not know how to play tennis. He actually said in an interview he had never even picked up a tennis racket before. So the person that taught Paul Bettany how to play tennis was a man named Pat Cash. And Pat Cash, his full name is Patrick Hart Cash. He's a retired Australian professional tennis player, and he reached a career high in the men's singles, ranking number 4 in May 1988, and another one in the doubles, ranking number 6 in August 1988. So Paul Bettany was trained by an actual tennis player who made it to number 4 in the world. And then I thought this was very cool. So, you know, at the end of the film, when he wins, spoiler alert, Wimbledon, he runs up into the crowd and goes and hugs his family. You know, there's that scene. Do you know that Pat Cash, who was the tennis player that taught Paul Bettany how to play tennis, after winning the 1987 Wimbledon contest, he also climbed into the stands and ran to his family to celebrate with them. So I thought that was just cool how they incorporated something that Pat Cash had actually done. And then obviously he went to teach Paul Bettany. So to almost bring in that in like sort of a trivia type of way, I thought that was... It was very cool. But imagine being taught tennis by a person who's been number 4 in the world.
Imagine being an actor who gets taught how to play tennis. Because obviously for an actor, when you play a role, you got to learn. You learn a lot, I'm sure. No. Okay, you're going to fly a helicopter.
Because you have to fake a personality.
Yeah, that's also true, hey? Yeah. You get a lot of actors who hang with famous people, let's say. Because from what I know, this tennis player, Peter, was... He's a real tennis player, actually. Yeah.
Is the name the? I know it was based on. Is like similar stories.
As far as I know, yes. I saw that. In fact, someone asked the question: was this guy a real
tennis player?
Tennis player, and
they said yes.
And the answer was yes.
I know that it was based on a book as well, so that is very possible. I saw in one of the info parts of Google that was a very bad description of where I saw it, but. They said it was based on a novel.
So, I quote, "The film echoes some real-life tennis stories, such as the 70 storybook romance between Jimmy Connors and Chris Evert." Okay, there you go. It sort of starts there. Incredible rides the... And then someone asked the question of how old does Vision... No. Okay. As far as I know, he was a real tennis player, yes.
That is hectic. So, this is quite interesting. The set for Peter Colt's house in the film is the same one used for William Thacker's house in Notting Hill.
You know what? That is cool.
And you know what's weird about that is they actually were originally intending for the lead role to go to Hugh Grant. But I'm very glad they did not do that. I feel like Paul Bettany was the person for this role. Hugh Grant, he's got... don't get me wrong. Hugh Grant is a brilliant rom-com actor. He's done... I mean, most of Hugh Grant's films are... Not that he can't do anything else. I mean, in The Gentleman, he was completely different. So different that when we watched it, my mom, who would have grown up watching his films, didn't recognize him. That's how good he was. So I'm not saying that he's now can only do rom-coms. It's just that's what he like chose to get into. But I'm really glad that they didn't go with him just because it would have just made it like, oh yeah, it's that type of movie. Like it would have been another Notting Hill or something like that. But Paul Bettany did actually say it was very big shoes to fill, obviously referring to like a Hugh Grant who just is so effortless in rom-coms. So, and then for the female lead role, they were at one point considering Reese Witherspoon. Can I also say I'm very glad that they did not choose her as well? Because it also would have made it, because she also often is in rom-coms. But you know when there's an, it's not that they're not a good actor. It's just because that actor's in it, it's like, oh, it's that type of movie. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, I'm really glad that they didn't put her in. And did you know that at one point they were considering Reese Witherspoon to play the lead female role in the film instead of Kirsten Dunst? Now, I'm really glad that they did not do that as well. Not that she's a bad actor, she's a good actor, but it just, you know how certain actors just have a certain feel to them? And when you watch the film, they just give off that like, oh, it's that type of film. So,
or not Schwarzenegger.
Exactly.
Action movie.
Or like The Rock. You just know. You like either he's in a really hardcore action movie
comedy
or it's
action.
Like a Jumanji. There's no in between type of thing. Or he's in like the Tooth Fairy.
I was just about to say
like
the
Tooth
Fairy.
That's your range. But I'm glad that I've personally enjoyed the cast. I think they did a very good
job.
English ran away from me there. They did do a very good job. Now this I do not agree with, Ryan. So, do you know that according to the script, Peter Colt's car was supposed to be a rare Porsche 356. But for the film, a Chesil Speedster 356 replica was used.
Someone knows what that exactly what you're talking about.
I don't think it wasn't a Porsche though in the film, right?
No, it was a silver
something else, whatever, chisel speed. That they should have just not done. Why would they not put a Porsche in their film?
It was like a roadster. Silver.
It was a cute car though, I must be honest. But still, it would have been nice if it was a Porsche. Have you seen vintage Porsches? Have you seen them, Ryan?
Not that I particularly took.
I'm going to send you photos. They are gorgeous. How funny though was his whole character, like the like his family
when
at home.
When the father rocks up, he just goes into this like squeal. This like squeal. He's just like, yes, sir, no, sir. Okay, sir.
Yes, I'm he was. Like, it was for me. It was very the storyline. Like you said, the storyline was very good. It was something different. It was like a breath of fresh air, and it was a very very good film. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this is so. If you know Paul Bettany's story, he's actually got quite a phenomenal story. So he obviously has been around for quite a while, especially doing like earlier movies, for example, like A Beautiful Mind. I mean, this one was in 2004. So the peak of his career was in the early 2000s, like round about that time. And then what actually happened was he then, after working on this film with Jon Favreau, he then got a call from Jon Favreau when they were making Iron Man to say they basically need a very robotic type voice, and he thought of him. So Paul Bettany laughed and said, yeah, sure, no problem, I'll do it. And then that's how he got the role as Jarvis. So he got the role of Jarvis because of this film. And there's a thing on Disney Plus called Assembled. And it's the making of WandaVision, the series WandaVision. So they basically go behind the scenes and, you know, interview the actors and all of that. And in one of the interviews, Paul Bettany said that Jon Favreau remembered him because they worked together on this film. So, yes, this film is one of the reasons that Paul Bettany is in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So we have to thank Wimbledon for the fact that we have Paul Bettany as Vision. But then another thing that I found very interesting was, so Paul Bettany obviously played Jarvis, and then he went on, I think, to do maybe another film, probably like Han Solo, that like, yeah. And then he went one day to see a producer. He was sitting with a big Hollywood producer, and the producer basically said to him, your career's over. Like, you've had your time, you've been in the spotlight, your career is done. I'm sorry to tell you this, but your career literally...
I think I was having a bad day.
No, he was being serious with him. Like, he literally told him, your career's done. And Paul Bettany stood up and said, there's a second and third act and mine's still coming, and walked out. But he said when he walked out, his legs went like jelly, and he literally... I mean, imagine being told your career's over. Like, literally. Like, that is not for the faint of heart. And then he said that he literally went out of that interview, sat in the street and was like hopeless. And then he got a call, and it was an unknown number, but he answered. And the person calling him was actually the director of Avengers, who is, his name's Josh. Oh, I forgot his surname now, but what is his surname? Josh.
The something. Brothers. Let's.
Yeah. He called him, right? And he said to him, would you be interested in playing Vision? And Paul Bettany was like, yes. And that's it. His second and third act came.
I can see this. He gets up, he dusts himself off, he looks back, and he's like, yeah, what? Sorry. You'll see me on screen.
You'll see me in Avengers, I mean, Age of Ultron.
He then took part in one of the biggest cliffhangers.
Right? Of history.
Right?
I mean, he went into Avengers, Age of Ultron. Then he was in, what was it? Civil War. Then it was... obviously, Infinity War and Endgame.
This guy has been in so many movies.
Obviously, it just started off as Jarvis, which he played in all of the Iron Mans, and obviously then in Avengers 1. And what he was saying was, what was nice with Jarvis was he would just have to go in like right at the end and, you know, do some voice work, and then he got paid a whole lot of money. But also he was saying, for the crew at the time, it was nice for them as well, because instead of them, you know how sometimes you pick up mistakes when you're like editing the film and then you kind of have to do reshoots or whatever. Instead of that, they could just get Jarvis to say, oh, the bad guy's coming. No. So instead of now going into extensive reshoots, they would just get Paul Bettany to come in and speak, and their problem was solved. And he was like, they gave me money. So, you know, it's always nice to get money for, you know, speaking. Yeah. And then that was Jarvis. But then he went on to be Vision.
If you're interested in what movies, what other movies this guy plays in, okay, Uncle Frank in 2020, obviously Solo we spoke about.
Although Uncle Frank, don't go watch, because that is, I think his character is gay. I'm just giving you the heads up.
All right, so 2018, I must have that one. Solo, yeah, obviously Solo, Star Wars Story, The Avengers, Journey's End, Captain America,
Civil War, right?
Yeah, okay. Shelter, Transcendence, Blood, Iron Man 3, Avengers, Morgan Cell, yeah, The Tourist.
Yes, he was in The Tourist.
Iron Man 2, Legion, Creation, The Young Victoria. Anyway, if you go into Wikipedia,
he's been in a lot of films, yeah. But I definitely say that the Marvel Cinematic Universe stepped in, and it may. Personally, I know Paul Bettany from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That's where I know him from.
There's a mini series television, television mini series, WandaVision.
Yes.
Apparently he's in there.
Yes, that is the second latest thing that Marvel has brought out. The latest thing is Falcon and Winter Soldier. Yes.
And you got Saturn Award for Best Supporting Actor.
In WandaVision.
For Avengers Age of Ultron.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Oh, wait, nominated. I'm lying.
You got nominated.
Sorry, nominated. Anyway, yeah. I'm sure you stood online. You should have thanked that producer. And I'd like to thank so-and-so for
telling me my career was over.
For supporting me and telling me to never give up.
Wow, the person's like, Yeah, but that for me, that's pretty cool to hear how his career has turned out. But the thing I enjoy about Paul Bettany is he always acts in completely different roles. Like whenever you see Paul Bettany on screen, generally he's completely different to the last time you saw him on screen. So like in Avengers, so the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Vision is a very like, how do I put it? He's like very sense, I don't know how to word this. He's just like logic, if I can put it like that. Like he's logic personified type of thing. That's the type of character Vision is. In WandaVision, you see more of like an emotional side of him. But then in this film, you've obviously got like the rom-com side of him where there's like that comedy aspect that comes out.
Yeah.
Then in A Knight's Tale, he's just a crazy liar that is just a crazy liar. And I know he's often acted as like psychopaths even. Oh, and he was in Han's Solo Star Wars Story. So Ron Howard, remember we in our show that we did on that movie, we said that the directors kept changing and then eventually Ron Howard was given the project and he obviously completed it. When Paul Bettany heard that Ron Howard had taken on the project, he messaged Ron Howard because they met on set of A Beautiful Mind. So that's where he obviously knows Ron Howard from. And then he messaged him to say, you know, have you ever sat thinking late at night that you really would like to be a part of the Star Wars franchise? That's the message he sent to Ron Howard. And apparently Ron Howard responded and said, "Hello, Al, let me get back to you." And in a few days, he got back to him and he got the lead role of the villain in Solo Star Wars Story. But he literally said he took his chances and he was like, you know, I cannot not be in the Star Wars franchise, even if I'm just a stormtrooper or something, I have to get my name into the Star Wars franchise. So, and he did.
It probably wasn't even for the money, it was just like,
no, he wanted to be in Star Wars.
Wait, I know Ron Howard. Wait, me and this
is chap, my opportunity.
Me and this chap, we get along so well. Hang on, let me just hoy my message there.
And he did, and he got the role.
Wow, that's interesting.
Right?
Good one.
Yeah. So it really is a good film. It was an enjoyable film. It's a feel good movie. By the end of the film, you're like, That was a cool movie. And I really, really enjoyed the whole how they brought tennis into it. And they really did that accurately even. Like, the whole... Because I don't watch it much anymore. But at one point, I was, like, heavily into tennis. I really enjoyed watching, like, the matches and all of that. But obviously, you get the outside view. So you get the long shots and all of that. And you don't get the backstory of the characters and the tennis players, but in this I liked how they did that backstory as well. So it was a really good film. I really enjoyed it. Ryan, it was a rom com. What did you think of it?
Like I said, the shots, I really enjoyed the shots and the characters were enjoyable for me. But the shots were even cooler.
What other rom coms did you enjoy? Because I feel like this is a very short list.
We did that other rom com.
Overboard.
Yeah.
Was that the only other rom com you've ever enjoyed?
For me, they're all the same, except for this one.
Oh, You see, people? So Wimbledon takes it. It is a rom-com like no other rom-com.
They threw in the shots for guys like me.
For you. Mm-hmm. And how cool was the whole, his thought processing, how they displayed that?
I'm like, this is the beginning of Vision.
That's true. But even like, the way he's like, you could do this. Yeah. No, you can't do this.
Shut up.
It was really, I loved that. I really, really liked that. Because that is probably what's going on in their heads. Yeah. That was very good.
So Peter Coulter, a British professional tennis player in his 30s, whose ranking was slipped from 11th to 119th in the world, has never really had to fight for anything, etc. Yeah, there is fictional character.
Oh, is he fictional?
Yes.
Okay, so he didn't exist then. But I know the story was based on like actual things that happened, because if you're wondering, there have been tennis players that have fallen in love. In fact, Roger Federer met his wife playing tennis, so they went to a tournament together and then met. And yes, I don't think, I stand to be corrected, I don't think she made it to like the top ranking woman tennis players, but obviously Federer did. But they met playing tennis. So for all you tennis players out there, there is love on the court to be found. And this movie is proof. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just the shots were cool.
Okay, there we go. For all you cinematographers out there who don't care much for love, the shots were cool.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So this has been The Movie Show right here on Active FM with another awesome movie review way back from 2004.
Mm-hmm. This is definitely a worth what to watch.
Yes, it definitely is.
In fact, me and my family will be watching it. I've watched it. Me and my family will be watching it. It's a good movie. It's a rom-com.
Your wife will enjoy it.
Yeah, I think I'll.
She definitely will enjoy it.
I'm going to bring my Mac there and I'm going to do something else.
And laugh at all the jokes.
And at the part, she's like, is he going to die? And I'm going to be like, yeah, probably.
They always do.
Exactly.
Wait, which part are you going to say he's going to die in?
I don't know. She's going to ask me something.
He's going to get hit by the tennis ball.
Is he going to win? Yeah.
Oh.
And I'll be like, yeah.
No, say no for the suspense.
Oh, no, sorry.
Yeah, no, he doesn't win.
Sorry.
Gets hit by a tennis ball and dies.
But he gets the gal.
Yeah. But we are signing out. If you want to listen to any of our previous shows, you can check them out. They're all there on Active FM.
But for our new show, we'll be next week, same time.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Catch us.
Yeah.
There.
Mm-hmm.
Unless something happens. Mm-hmm. But that something's not going to happen.
Yeah, it's not.
So
we'll be there.
See you next week.
Peace out.
Cheers.
Enjoying the Active FM shows? Well, then catch us on Instagram at ActiveFM777.
Twitter and Gab at ActiveFM. Facebook at ActiveFM/777. As well as YouTube at ActiveFM and our website at www.activefm.co.za.
Don't stop. Don't hesitate. Find, follow and enjoy us on all our different platforms. You don't want to miss out.